Yes, I've come to like that song. Didn't like it when I first heard it, although I always have loved the video clip. You know, that's the one where he's singing and all this painting appears over him and the girl he used to know, it sort of vanishes from. Except it should be someone who I used to know, I always think, not or whom, I suppose. Anyway, it was a number one pick in Triple J's Hottest 100 in 2011. And as it turns out, 2011 is the starting point in British-Canadian author Tom Rackman's second novel, which is called The Rise and Fall of Great Powers. Now, this book spans three decades, and I'm joined now by producer Sarah Lestrange. Sarah, Matilda Zilberg, I guess it is the main character. Who's she?
Well, yes, it's hard to pronounce, isn't it? She's had a very unusual upbringing. She moved every year with her father until she was about 10, and then she moved around the world with three very eccentric people, not going to school but learning life's lessons from the people around her. And when we meet her in the novel, this is in 2011, she owns a failing second-hand bookshop in Wales. But there are questions about her past that tug at her, and she sets out to answer those questions.
Yes, and there are quite a few interesting characters she meets there, including a chap in the bookshop. Well, Tom Rackman joins us now from our Brisbane studios, and he's talking to Sarah.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Tom, I want to share with you something I remembered recently, and I wonder whether you remember when we first met, I interviewed you about your debut novel, The Imperfectionists, and afterwards you accidentally dropped your mobile phone over the level 4 balcony, and we then spent a good amount of time looking for the remains of your phone. I think you wanted to get the SIM card.
Yeah, I'd completely forgotten, but now I remember it vividly. That's really funny, yeah.
And I raise this because the main character in your novel, Matilda, or Tooley, she just wouldn't understand what the fuss is about losing a mobile phone because she's not of the digital world, although she is in the digital age.
Yeah, that's true. I think that one of the features of the main character of this book is that she's caught between all sorts of different things, between wanting to have her own life detached from the way that society is and at other points feeling the incursions of that society upon her. And in the present day, the biggest incursions are the digital ones. So when we first meet her, she's running this dusty little, hopeless, frankly, bookshop. And happy
I think that's
to
how
be...
most bookshop owners
oh,
feel
come
these
on.
Days.
No, don't say that. But she's happy to be surrounded by all of these printed friends of hers with no batteries and the sorts of things you can drop off a balcony and then go and pick up and collect without having to worry about the SIM card. And she finds herself, however, increasingly affected, as we all are, by the digital world as it sort of surrounds us and closes in useful and sometimes even in confusing and threatening ways. And in fact, her story is one that funnily is sort of set off by the internet age that she has avoided, because though she's happy holed up in that shop reading her books and dealing with her rather useless assistant,
Fog,
and all of that, Fog.
What a great name happy. For an assistant at a secondhand bookshop.
Well, she's happy to just to hang around there. But then a message reaches her on, of all places, on Facebook, and she finds herself drawn back into this one story that she, this lifelong great reader, has never really understood, which is the story of her own life.
And then we track her life over three decades. In fact, I think she's my age, because her story flits between 1988, when she's 9 or 10, then 1999 and then the present 2011. Why these times did you want to focus on Tooley's life?
Well, to explain, the book is divided into these three different sections, those periods that you mentioned, and they're interspersed throughout the book. So what I wanted was an effect of jumping among these three different periods, both in her life and also in the times that we're living in. I was interested in writing a book that was primarily, I hope, a good story with great characters, but I was also curious to try to engage in some way with the world that we're living in right now, which seems to me to be an amazingly fascinating place, not just for all these digital things that I was talking about, but also the politics of it. And to tell the story of the present day, it seemed to me necessary to go back 25 years. And the start of that story is in 1988, so just before the end of the Cold War, the fall of the Soviet Union, and the reordering of the world. And then the next section chronologically is 1999, so just before the changes of the millennium and the attacks of September 11th and all of the disasters and problems that followed that, up to more or less the present day, with the implication that once again, perhaps we are poised just on the cusp of some extraordinarily significant change. And I don't entirely define what that might be, but I pose a few possibilities.
Well, the times are always changing, I guess. And I guess these times that you've touched on and the different historical changes that occur at those times, these are the rise and fall of great powers. But I wonder, is there also a more personal rise and fall of great powers in the life of Thule?
Yeah, definitely there is. The title, I hope that the title would, for somebody who reads the book, resonate in a sort of puzzling and hopefully interesting way, that it's a novel, and the title sounds like a little bit like nonfiction, a lot like nonfiction. But as you read it, I hope that the reader will think to themselves, what exactly are these powers rising and falling? There's, of course, the political powers, the empires, like the empire of the United States that sort of rose to perhaps its peak around the time of the millennium and faced all sorts of threats and decline after that. But there are other senses, as you implied there, and one of the key ones is the rise and fall of great powers in the sense of influences of other people over the course of your life, so that there might be one person who, let's say an aunt who seems like this great hero of yours in childhood, who in a later stage of life seems an altogether different sort of person, or just in reverse, say a younger brother who seems a fool as a kid and then later on has a depth of character that you don't realize. So that sort of rise and fall of influences was one of the more personal aspects of it. But also, I was interested in fleshing out or discussing the rise and fall of great powers over the course of a single lifespan. So the rise in competency and knowledge in childhood up to adulthood, where you find the limits of your great powers, and then till old age, where you start to see those powers dissolve and dissipate before your eyes. And there are different characters in this book who are facing precisely those key moments of life.
For a significant part of this book, there's a lot of guessing games that the reader has to go through. The reader guesses at Thule's relationship with people. For instance, in the 1988 section, when she's just a girl, Thule travels with Paul to Bangkok. We don't know if Paul is her father. He won't even hug her. Why the mystery? This isn't a mystery book.
It's not a mystery book in the sense of daggers and disguises, definitely not. But it is a mystery in a way, I suppose. There's actually a point where the character you mentioned, Fogg, her assistant in the bookshop, says when she's trying to figure out what's going on or what has gone on in her life, and she's starting to falter in her pursuit of that information, he says, don't stop yet. This is starting to become a mystery story. And the mystery here is almost like not a whodunit, but a who is she? And in a way, she's just trying to work out the details of what happened and looking back to her past because it was such a confused one. And I intend it primarily as her story, hopefully an interesting one that for reasons that come clear was confusing and misled at the time. But I think that there are elements that might resonate with the way that one does look back at one's past and tries to figure out quite how one became who one is. And there's always that question, is one created by one's influences, by one's past, by one's family and friends and location and identity and sense of belonging? Or is one created by a sort of essence, a particular you that would have been the same whether you'd been born in a different country or in a different century? And whether you have any agency over that or whether you're purely defined outwardly. And I think that those are the sorts of mysteries and questions that are alluded to in her own search.
But I really was worried at one point that she'd been abducted, because there's this mystery about what happens to her after she's 10 and goes on to live with these three other people who aren't Paul, who aren't her father. You know, I was really worried for her. But once again, it set me up to think one thing when actually the story was going in another way. Was that intentional to create that worry?
Probably, yeah. I apologize that I caused you such distress. definitely.
Thank you for your apology.
I think it's definitely one of those things. I think it's part of the drama of storytelling that you try to orchestrate everything in a way that you very carefully feed out the bits of information as they seem fit, as they seem necessary, and as they seem intriguing. And also, I think what's key in this book is what I alluded to before, the way that these different time periods are mixed up. Then it means that the story isn't told from day one to day 100, let's say. It's told in a big mixed hodgepodge. And as a result of that, it's almost inevitable if you were to see glimpses of anybody's life at different stages, there would be things that would be unclear, but gradually they would come together. And I suppose that I imagined the structure or the effect of this book is something akin to standing very, very close to a very, very large painting at the start and looking at a few details of that and recognizing what those represented, but being unable to make sense of the entirety of the picture, and gradually with each chapter taking one step back so that by the end of the book you finally see the entirety of what was intended and the entirety of her story. But it's inevitable in the way that the story is told that there are going to be bits that are out of focus early on and gradually will come into focus, and even parts that appear to come into focus and then once seen within the context of the whole picture change their shape entirely.
They certainly do, and you really do have to read the whole book to get the whole picture. Thanks so much for talking to me, Tom Rackman, today.
Thank you, Sarah, and thanks for helping me fix my phone.
You're welcome.
Sarah Lestrange there. So his phone did come good, did it?
Well, I think we found the phone.
That's all I care about.
We found the phone. He was able to get the SIM card. No, the phone was pretty destroyed, but the SIM card is a crucial thing.
Oh, yeah, I see. So he went. The SIM card went on to have another life.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for that. The book is called The Rise and Fall of Great Powers. It's published, Sarah, by
Text.
This is Books and Arts on RN. I'm Michael Cathcart.